welcome pudding people to another episode of Everybody Loves Pudding, Ken's Movie Reviews. I am your host, not Ken, here with a, what should we call this, a substitution, not originally on the docket. We were originally going to review some episodes, if you will. We're going to rearrange the schedule a bit and come with you today with a review of a movie that's been out for a bit, but just kind of hit the digital marketplace recently and is now available streaming on Paramount Plus if you're lucky enough to have that streaming platform. I'm talking, of course, about Transformers 1. Now, we've done a review in the past on Transformers the movie. We're old. We grew up with the original Transformers, right? We did the movies from the 80s and the show from the 80s, and we had the toys from the 80s, the Hasbro product. We had all of those things. We grew up on it. We loved it. I've got the DVD collector's set. DVD, yes, it's short for digital video disc for you youngins out there. That is a complete series collection of the Transformers. It is a fundamental part of our youth, if you grew up, you know, in the 80s, of course. So, this movie is kind of the, let's call it the origin story of the core group of Transformers that we grew up with. Optimus Prime, Megatron, Bumblebee, Soundwave, Shockwave, you know, the core group that we saw, the Gen 1s, if you will. And there's been many, many iterations of Transformers since then with different storylines. And the Transformers 1 really kind of pulls a lot of those elements together, pulls some storylines together, and you get a kind of congruent, made up, of sorts, you know, like a conglomeration of storylines to make a storyline to give us a little background on what was going on. I think more detail than what people had thought was, you know, maybe possible, unless you're going to do some stupid Michael Bay version. Anyway, I've always been a big proponent of animated things. I love animated TV shows. I love animated movies. I really like watching Marvel projects and DC projects in animated form for seasons, so long as it's good. And I get some element of that is going to be directed towards, you know, not 40-year-olds. I understand that. I get it. But X-Men 97 really showed you that you can do it. You can do animated, and you can do it for adults, and it's really good. So, is this one geared towards adults? Well, I'm going to go with no, in a sense. I feel like if you grew up with the Transformers, that you would appreciate this movie, but it's really geared for a new generation of youngsters to watch and learn about the Transformers world. Okay, so we oftentimes do a kind of spoiler-free, just like, should I watch this type of thing? Before we get into the nitty-gritty of our standard movie scoring formula, blah, blah. If you liked the Transformers in the 80s, I think you probably won't like this. Okay. I thought it was great. I thought this was a very good movie. I get the cheesiness. I get why purists of Transformers won't like it. I get all those things. If you liked the Michael Bay things, good, but you know, whatever. Well, whatever. This is different. I think it's good. I think it's actually very good. I think it's engaging. I think the storyline is adequate, more than adequate. I think some of the elements of the storyline are something representative of what we grew up with, while of course taking liberties to put a congruent story together, right? So there's that part of it that's in there that I feel like, I don't know, I appreciated a lot of it. I liked it. Give it a chance. If you grew up on Transformers, give it a chance. You'll know after 30 minutes, you're like, yeah, this ain't for me. You'll figure it out. But let's kind of dig down deep and go through our standard formula. Let's get a little overview of the movie, right? So this, like I said before, this is the origin story, really, of Optimus Prime and Megatron. This is an origin of, what Cybertron was before it became a desolate, war-torn planet, if you will. Okay, so the situation is that they are mining bots, and they're mining for Energon to, you know, provide for the planet. And it's a story from, like, that everyday robot who's down mining, but yearns for, thinks that they can do more. Okay, so first of all, it's animated. So if we're going to break down our categories, why don't we just go in order? Why do we have to go crazy? Why don't we just go with the cast? Okay, oftentimes when you look at an animated feature, the cast obviously is going to make or break it, especially when you have Transformers. Oh my gosh, when you have one of the most iconic voices that you can possibly ever get for a character, and it has voiced that character from inception to all the new movies, right? It's hard to change. You grew up, if you watched animated stuff, you grew up with a Batman character that was voiced by the same person and became iconic for that voice forever. You knew the voice of Batman was Kevin Conroy. You knew it, right? But it can't be the voice forever. Well, you know, we're kind of in that same boat. Peter Cullen can't be Optimus Prime forever. As much as we want him to be, he can't be the voice forever. So, who should we get? Who should we get? I know Chris Pratt's pretty much done every single voice imaginable. Let's get another Avenger. Let's get Chris Hemsworth. Why would we not get an Australian to do a standard English-driven voice with no accents for a, you know, animated feature where it's going to be voice only? Why would we not do that? Okay, so clearly, as you watch the movie, the voice acting in this picture is actually very good. There's very few people who are voicing characters, because a lot of the characters are bots, but there's obviously like a dozen standout unique characters that you will see over and over again. Brian Tyree Henry did Megatron. Scarlett Johansson, Alita 1. Keegan-Michael Key, B-127. Steve Buscemi, I knew it was him as soon as he started talking. Starscream. Lawrence Fishburne, Alpha Trion. John Hamm, Sentinel Prime. So, a lot of these people, you know, but you know, there's a couple people. Vanessa Liguori did Arachnid. Now, we'll get into that character in a little bit. But anyway, how did everybody do? So let's be honest here. When you're listening to the core of the movie, Chris Hemsworth is fine. When you listen to the beginning of the movie, it sounds off. And when you listen to the end of the movie, it's awful. you'll understand if you watch it. But the core of the movie, it was good. Brian Tyree Henry as Megatron, you know what, was fine throughout the whole thing. Scarlett Johansson as Alita 1, she was fine throughout the whole one. Except, I watched this with headphones on, and I felt like you really got the voice track separate from the movie track. It's almost like you were there watching them record in the studio, so the mixing wasn't great on it. Maybe that was an issue. Anyway, she was fine, but all I can think of every time that the character spoke was like, it's Scarlett Johansson. You know, like there was, I didn't get the character aspect of it. So they did Bumblebee, right, as one of the main characters in here too. And I always thought that Bumblebee was like that good friend, loyal soldier type character who always was there, always was consistent. I guess was fun loving, but was never really like the jokester. And so you got the Keegan-Michael Key voice acting special out of this, which was great. I just, my brain parts don't, like the character presented to me doesn't match the character from my expectations. But you know what? In this scenario, it worked. So you purists out there are going to argue that that was not great at all. Steve Buscemi doing Starscream was fine. And you know why it was fine? Because we all know that the Starscream voice is like weird, scratchy, craggly. Well, it's not in this movie originally, and it gives us a reason as to why his voice is actually messed up. So kudos for throwing a little something in there, movie makers. But anyway, overall, out of a possible score of 20 for the cast, I did a 16. Like I said, there were some things that I just took issue with, but not enough to really crush the category. Okay, so let's move on to the director. Now, the director of this one is Josh Cooley. Now, what has Josh Cooley done? Well, you know, he's actually done some voice acting in quite a few things that you would recognize, including Inside Out. Now, in terms of writing credits, so he's got a few of them, you know, Toy Story 4, Inside Out. He was in the art department for a lot of these, but in terms of the director's seat, Toy Story 4 was one of the bigger ones that stands out, and now this one. I felt that Toy Story 4 was a great film, very good. All the Toy Stories have been good over time, but Toy Story 4 was very good. Worth revisiting if you haven't watched it recently. Very good show. So how did he do in this one? So really, let's be honest with ourselves here. I feel like the pace of the movie was good. The storytelling was good. The subplots were good. The in and outs were good. There was a twist of a story, which you could really see coming from a mile away. Good. Nothing too crazy. I think the construction of everything really worked out well. The picture that you got of a planet that was bustling but was struggling, and you know, the ancient storylines that these Transformers have conveyed with us, oh gosh, 40 years ago, about their past and about the growth and then the desecration of the planet and then their escape. So like there was a basis for that story from somewhere, and I felt like the director really put it together to showcase a story of mostly congruent bits and pieces that were taken from the original storyline and put together to make something happen. Like I said, if you're a purist, you're probably not going to like it. You're going to be picky about something. And I get it. I get it. I thought the director did really well in this film. I thought everything went together. I thought everything went together really well. It's hard to really say in this because you've got so many elements that the director's going to be in charge of, like they always are, but you're not really seeing it in terms of like an acting perspective. You try to get what you can out of the actors, actresses doing their voice work. And if they're not selling it, it's hard to put it on screen. So it's a combination of everything. But honestly, I think he did a bang-up job. So out of 15, I gave him 13 out of this one. Okay, so let's go on to the next category. Next category is a base category. We got locations. It's always hard to certainly judge locations because a lot of times we think about vast mountainscapes lined with beaches and sunlight. Well, this is a city. This is a planet that is virtually at an enormous underground city because the surface was just ravaged. And if you watch some of the elements of this particular cityscape, you honestly can really see the enormity of everything. They are really... It feels like you are miles above, but really you are miles below. As they dig deeper to mine more energon, they build and build and build. And the scale and the scope of this planet is really, they put it as a much, much larger planet than it was originally portrayed as from, the Gen 1 series. So... kudos for the locations on this. I thought it really conveyed a scope of vastness, and that's hard to describe. There was a lot of that kind of floating upside down city. There was mines, and then there was a lot in the surface as well. Once again, the surface was ravaged, but you got that look, you got that feel, you got that post-apocalyptic feel as well. So I thought that the locations were top-notch in this. Color was good. Spacing was good. Nothing looked like it was out of proportion. You know what I'm saying? So I'm really going to give this one a solid score, 9 out of a possible 10. Okay, so then the next one, we've got props. Props in a movie, a live action movie. So you're going to have costumes. We do costume and props, right? So what are they dressed like? Is it a period appropriate? Are the weapons, if it's an action movie, do they look appropriate? The swords, the shoes, you know, is the MacGuffin, does it look silly? Well, in this one, what is the main look, the aesthetic we're going with? And you know what? They chose a different aesthetic in this one. We can't go with the boxy transforming robots, right? They had to have everything because that's how the modern era works now. Slick and stylish. More rounded, more shiny, more detailed. You couldn't do that in the 80s. You know, Optimus had blue legs and then they were squares. The end. You know, like that's what it was. But you got so much more detail in this. The thing that I will know that the purists are going to hammer away at is a lot of the characters maintained their shape. So Jazz, for example, right? Jazz had really just eyes and then like a mask, if you will, almost like a ninja kind of covering up his face. And he had these big things sticking out the side of his head. Well, that's what that character looked like in this movie. You know, in terms of Optimus, Optimus has kind of a rounded head where Megatron has a cone-shaped head, right? I'm right. And they maintained all those shapes so that the shape, the form factor of everybody was pretty good. I liked the look. I liked the aesthetic. It was kind of... Is it too much to say too much? It's hard for me to say because, once again, I'll go back to it. I'm doing my review off of what I think, not what other people would be thinking that I should think. And I know a lot of people are going to knock the look and feel of this and say that it's it's not even too cartoony. That's not it. But it's not crisp adulting, if you will. And there's got to be a balance of it. It's a rated PG film. You're going for a certain audience. You have to tone it down a bit, make the things a little softer. But honestly, you know, one of the big things as the story progressed, Megatron's eyes and like the Optimus's eyes, they really focused on those throughout the show. And, you know, towards the end, as Megatron got angrier and angrier, his eyes changed color and it had a good look. It had a good feel to it. Once the minor bots got their, it's part of the story. Once they got their transforming cogs, they became more familiar looking. Whereas mining bots, there was individuality. It's a big word, but just not as much of it. I really enjoyed the color. I thought everybody looked good. I thought that as they transformed into what a Cybertronian thing would have looked like, not an Earth thing. They haven't been to Earth. They don't know what that looks like. Some of the things were overstated a bit. Megatron's arm cannon was gigantic. He transformed into a tank. You know, you saw that in Transformers movies recently, right? He transformed into like a tank, where in the cartoon, he always went from a gigantic figure to a tiny pistol, right? We didn't see that because that didn't make sense. Everything made sense in terms of how they transformed from a size standpoint to a capability standpoint. So I really appreciated all that stuff. The purists are not going to like everything. And like I said, some of the things were a bit rounded. Disproportionate, not in a bad way. Out of 10, I'm going to give it an 8. Okay, so another big category here, cinematography. Not Cinnamon Toast Crunch, cinematography. So cinematography and the live actions, we oftentimes will focus on fight sequences and how good or bad they look. The cuts, you know, the edits on the screen. Of course, the animation, or in terms of the animation, the CGI that was built into the movie. Well, of course, this is all animation. This is all, you know, low-end CGI, very, very high-end animation. You had a very good realistic look to a lot of things, but still cartoony for a lot of things. So it's a good blend, a very good mix. I felt the colors looked sharp. I felt like there was a lot of doom and gloom, and you had a lot of blues and purples, but there were some pinks. Alita One is pink, right? So she stood out, but still grungy, right? Grimy, because she was a miner. There was a lot of very good colors. There was a lot of pop. There was a lot of good lighting. There was dim when it needed to be dim. There was honestly a little bit of everything. The fight sequences, so... Let's go like more action sequences, because the Optimus character is curious. In one of the opening sequences, he's looking for information about stuff. He's in a vault, and then he gets discovered within the vault. So he's got to escape the vault. And we're talking about running and sprinting and falling off of buildings and falling down through the sky, which is not the sky, like, but the buildings that are higher up than the lower buildings. And because it's robots, a meat bag isn't going to survive a lot of these things, but because it was a robot, you got the idea of them moving and running as a robot would. In a sense, they seemed indestructible. That's not true, but they had that look and feel because they can do more than what a meat bag could, because they're made out of metal. But they showed that they could be harmed. They definitely showed that in the movie, that if you got blasted by something, you would get harmed. Remember I said they were all miners. There was a sequence where Optimus went back to save Jazz because Jazz got trapped under a collapsing mine. And you know, that whole sequence was very, very good as well. The escape from the collapsing mine looked good, had a good pace, had a good sequence to it. Jazz got trapped. Optimus went back. He wasn't Optimus. He was just Prime. Wasn't even Optimus Prime. That's not even true. He went back to save Jazz. His name was Orion Pax. Sorry. And when part of the sequence is like, we got to get Jazz out of here, his leg was trapped under the rock and his leg got ripped off as they were pulling him away out of the mine. So there was definitely consequence. The characters could be injured. Bad things could happen to them. I just felt in watching all of the different things as they moved, as they went through different zones, as they had consequence and action and violence, not violence, I'm overstating that, but you know what I'm saying, that it just looked and felt polished. It looked good. It looked good. I'm going to give, out of 15, a solid 13 on the cinematography. I think at times might have been too quick for those who are watching it, and you might have missed some of the detail of what was going on. And, you know, the fight sequences were good, but they're cheesy because it's for kids, right? So even though there is consequence, they're going to get away in outlandish ways. So that's got its own little, that's a plot thing, but it's a cinematography thing as well. But 13 out of 15 is a top-notch score. Speaking of score, that's the next category. If you go with Transformers the movie, it's got one of those, like, it's a pure 80s score. It's got some bangers in it. It's got the ones, like, man, when some of those lines just hit, you know, when Optimus is doing his thing and he's going through, you know, the sequence of like having the fight and like, you got the touch. It's just, it is an iconic, if you're a fan of it and you grew up with it, it is an iconic feel when those tunes come on when you're watching the movie. Is this going to be the same look and feel? No, it's not going to be like that. It's just, we are in a new era, and the movie that is available, the movies that we have here, is, it's different, right? And what you're going to get out of this is just a congruence of a bunch of different songs and different kind of made for the movie songs. And it was very good. Honestly, it was very good. Some of, what am I thinking here? When you think of what is going on in today's music world, unfortunately, is a lot of, it's digital. Some of your favorite artists don't ever pick up an instrument. They play everything on a Mac, right? There's a couple that I will not mention that are just like, that's all they do. It is a different type of musical talent. When the Transformers soundtrack came out in the 80s, there was hair metal galore, and there were definitely digital keyboards backing all those tracks. That was what was that in that era, and it made sense. In this one, just to kind of give you an idea, one of the original songs for the film was performed by Quavo and Ty Dolla Sign. I think Quavo is in Migos, right? Like, that's how good I am with today's music. And there was definitely a good feeling in the movie. You had a lot of music that I don't think interrupted anything. I don't think got in the way of anything. made for the pace, made everything fit. The soundtrack actually just fit the way it was supposed to fit. So this one's easy to score. I'm gonna give it a 9 out of 10. Okay, so now we're on to the last main category, which is the plot. This is a big one. This one's out of a possible 20. Okay. Here's the thing. Here's the story. Listen to this. I liked it. I thought that the presentation of everything from start to finish made sense for the scope of the movie that we were looking at. They gave you an origin of where they were at currently. Basically, the Transformers in this current time frame had grown up always knowing the same thing. That the Prime, the main Prime, sacrificed himself to make a planet and at its core created the Primes, and the Primes were there to defend the planet. But then something happened to the Primes. They were, the planet was attacked. It was invaded by the Quintessons. So the Quintessons came to kill and to destroy the planet and take it for all of its energon. Okay. I'll buy into that. That sounds great. And what happened to the Primes? All the Primes were destroyed except for one. One was still alive. Sentinel Prime. And the way they had this current iteration of the story set up, remind me if this sounds like prescient on today's landscape, if you will. It was designed, it was a network of misinformation. So these Primes all grew up in a couple different classes. Some were still able to transform, and they were the higher tier ones. And everyone else were regular robots with their transforming cogs removed, or they never had them. And they worked in the mines, and you worked in the mines, and you worked in the mines, and that is what you did. The end. You were either in a good part of the mine or 50 stories down in the mine, depending on how you behaved or how you performed. And how you performed got you, you know, you're looking to get the promotion, to fall into line so that you could be, you know, a leader of a core group of miners to produce energon at a high rate to save the planet and save the people. That's what was there. Sentinel Prime was the main person who was the driving force behind looking for the matrix of leadership, the old MacGuffin, if you will. The matrix of leadership was going to save the planet, because when the Quintessons came and killed all the other Primes, it was lost. So Sentinel Prime is the one person who was there for you, for the planet, who is going to go searching for this matrix of leadership so that they can save the planet. It's when it's presented to you, it is great. It shows you that this working class is in the place that they're supposed to be at, because that's where they're supposed to be, and that is what they are assigned to do. If you do not do it well, you are going to get punished and go to a place that's even worse than the place that you are at. But together, the collective of the miners are working hard to save the planet, because the energon seemingly has disappeared with the loss of the matrix of leadership. And Orion Pax is a person that has his whole existence up to this. He has gone against the grain. Kind of, he was not the troublemaker, but the adventurer troublemaker. And he felt that he was destined for more. That's okay. Cheesy, but I'll go with it. So part of his adventure is finding more details about the past. And he's in the archives, which are under guarded lock and key, right? So there's no researching what happened in the past. What I tell you now has happened is what has happened. And like, that's the whole premise of this movie. It's really something more. There's a lot of adulting in this story, even though it's presented to you as a kid's movie. And really the whole movie is just Prime doing, you know, Orion Pax doing Orion Pax things, dragging his reluctant friends into this on purpose, by deception, or by happenstance, and bringing them along on an adventure for them to finally, for him to discover that what he feels like he's a bigger person than what he is right now. He can do more. And it's about finding that matrix of leadership. Well, this just leads him down the path of, you've discovered that Sentinel Prime is an absolute scumbag this whole time and doesn't care for anyone else but himself. And, you know, the Megatron character, that's where he goes bad. He's believed in the Sentinel Prime character for his entire life. His whole basis of what he was doing in the mind was so that he could perform for Sentinel Prime, so that he could lead, that Sentinel Prime could lead us out of this dark time. And lo and behold, Sentinel Prime, yeah, he was a scumbag, and that really made the Megatron character, he made him mad once he discovered what had happened. And it continually got worse, and it drove his rage so much that he became the Megatron character. Now, where did he get all the bad guys from? Well, this was another cool aspect of it as well. Once they made it to the surface, there was a layer, if you will, of outcasts that were out there. And these outcasts all flew. They all were the transforming planes. They could all fly. They were the ones out there kind of scavenging. They were kind of left for dead out there, but they banded together, and Starscream was the leader. Go figure. But then he shows up, the Megatron character shows up, and he's getting, you know, he's stronger, grumpier, and he's like, nah, I'm not going to put up with this. And there you see the struggle for leadership. Like I said, there's a little thing in there where he actually picks up Starscream. He's going to kill him, squeezes his throat, busts up his voice box, and now he starts with that scraggly, you know, Starscream voice. I thought that was cheesy, but cool. It you'll find in watching this movie that a lot of points from the original cartoon were touched on and found minute origins for some of them. Also, a lot of callbacks. They're talking in one sequence about how when you're navigating, there's a race that goes on, which is a different part of a subplot of the storyline to kind of get these characters, you know, to feel good about themselves. They're the non-transforming robots. They're going to be in a race, and they're going to show the transforming robots that us miners, you know, we can actually do more. And part of that sequence is he's dragged the Megatron character in with him, and they're kind of, you know, like their best friends are having an argument. And, you know, part of the thing that goes in there is saying when you go through the race, you have to have the right touch and you have to have the right power to be able to do the thing. And strangely enough, that's what the song was about from the first movie. Cheesy, I know, but it was a callback that just kind of it made sense. It all made sense. And, you know, the story just progresses and progresses. Come to find out Sentinel Prime is at the mercy of the Quintessons, because the Quintessons are really going to kill everybody unless they get fed the proper amount of Energon. So it's really the rise of the factions and all those minor bots that Orion Pax had worked with, he gives them, you know, he's got that leadership quality. He's got that pep talk potential. He's like really getting them psyched up. Like, this is our chance to fight. This is our chance to do what needs to be done. And it's just really showing his leadership and his belief in himself and his belief in his fellow, they weren't Autobots at the time, but, you know, Transformers. There's a whole sequence and there's whole bits and pieces of him just like, this is what I was made for. I feel like I made for more. And part of it is the leadership, hence him, you know, being, you know, issued, granted the Matrix of Leadership at the end. There's a whole sequence with it. I just thought that all the plot points, it went together really well. I thought it made a good story. Are there weak spots? There always are weak spots in stories. And I'm missing so many details. I just, honestly, I watched this a couple days ago. I want to watch it again. I thought it was very good. So the plot out of 20, I gave it a massive 17. This is where movies can get killed. And like I said, if you're a Transformers purist, you probably don't like this plot at all. But I thought it, honestly, I thought it was great. So that is it for the categories. We're ready for a total score. Are there any bonus points? Yes, there are bonus points. I'm going to give one bonus point for those dialogue throw-ins that are callbacks to the songs and other things from the shows. They built them into the dialogue, and I know when you watch it, you just be like, oh, that's cheesy. But honestly, it worked. It really did. It could have been way worse. It wasn't forced. It was cheesy. And to me, that's okay. So a total score for Transformers 1 is a whopping 86 out of 100. Now, if you guys who are listening, if you stuck around long enough, I encourage you, if you are a fan of animated shows at all, if you are a fan of Transformers, if you're a fan of sci-fi fantasy, and you can take yourself out of that hardcore mode of like, it has to do blah, blah, blah. Like, if you can get yourself out of that, please watch this movie. It's very fun. Your kids can watch it. I think there's a lot of humor all throughout it. There's a lot of like silliness throughout the movie. It can be detracting at times, but it fits. It'd be a great family movie if you're good with sci-fi fantasy as your viewing night. But I would recommend watching that. Until next week, on the docket, we have a couple of things. We might be reviewing something. We might throw in a history of comics. We've had to shuffle so many things around. Who knows? We've got a review of Vox Machina, season 3 coming up. We've got another episode of History of Comics and TV. We haven't caught up with that in quite some time. We've got a review of the Penguin series coming up. So honestly, there's a lot of good stuff to look forward to. So thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.